Okay, welcome back to Coast, and a couple hours of open lines for you. Just about anything goes. Paul Hellyer, great guest. Did you know that in four more days, he's going to be 93 years old? 93 years old. That's amazing. To be not only that energetic, but to have the mindset that he has. Good for him. Way to go, Paul. Anyways, we're going to come back in a moment. We'll take your calls, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Now, with your tweet questions, of course, by going to coasttocoastam.com, and Twitter is up there in the far right-hand corner. The hashtag is at open lines coast to coast. Asterisk, actually. Open lines C2C. Open lines C2C. So let's go to open lines. Lots of things going on, but I want to know what you have on your mind. Let's start by going to Peter in Miami, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. George Norrie.
Good to have you with us. Are you seeing a lot of mosquitoes out there? They're panicking the world about this.
Well, I live approximately 3 miles south of the infected area.
Ah.
Okay, and I have seen some mosquitoes, but not a whole lot of mosquitoes.
I mean, you're going to see them anyway. It's summertime.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course. And the mosquito season runs basically July to like October 31st to maybe November the 15th.
Are people panicking down there?
No, sir.
No. I have a feeling they're making us think it's so bad. It's really not. It's not.
I mean, it's basically like the Hillary Clinton hype and the Barack Obama hype.
Everything is hyped, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Everything. Anyways, what's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was speaking to your producer or your...
That's Tommy.
Tommy, okay. And I just woke up in the middle of the night fortunately for me, I fallen asleep with the radio on, and I'm listening. I'm like, all these people talking about this and that. I'm like, well, what do they expect? You know, they've taken the Lord's Prayer out of this Dade County school system.
Well, they've taken it out of all the schools.
Yes, yes. And this happened back in the 60s, in 1959, in 1960, 1961, 1962, the Lord's Prayer, the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yep. You remember remember Red Skelton, the comedian?
Yes, sir.
He had the greatest rendition of talking about that and predicting what would happen when they take that out of schools. He knew.
Of course.
Oh, well.
Do not say, oh, well. that's the worst thing we can do is to give up hope.
Well, I never give up hope.
Okay.
I'm always a trooper in there until the last.
So am I, you know, Both my friend and I, we both joined the Army together on the buddy system.
Thanks for serving.
Yes, sir.
Navy for me. I had a buddy in high school. Our other buddy, the two of them, signed up for the Air Force, and the day before they were supposed to go in, they got into a car accident, and one of them died.
Oh, Lord.
Horrible situation.
I'm sorry to hear that.
18 years old.
Yeah.
God.
And well, this is back in 1961 when we joined the Army. And the Vietnam War was just getting cranked up.
Did you see action there?
Yes, sir. Got shot 6 times.
Oh, my God.
And re-upped.
And you re-upped. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
When you came back, Peter, how did they treat you?
Like dogs.
It was horrible, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No respect for...
It's horrible.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's
horrible. I think it's a little better now. It wasn't as bad as Vietnam with the way they treated people.
Yeah. I don't really know about this, but my buddy Joe, right, went into the hospital and he was having problems. And they're gonna put a stent in his
artery.
So he could swallow food. But then they said something about putting a stent in his liver. And I said, Joe, don't do that, man, because people that get stents in their livers die of the infection within 36 hours. So my friend Joe Jenkins said to the VA hospital surgery here in Miami, Florida, do not put the stent in my liver. And he specifically spelled it out and signed his name below it. And they went ahead and did it anyways, and he died.
Oh.
And I went back to that hospital, sat down with three surgeons, and I called them all murderers.
And what'd they do? Anything?
Yeah, they kicked me out of the hospital. And took away my VA benefits.
You're kidding me. Because
I have been to all the Democrats, Republicans trying to help me. No help. Zero help.
Nobody's down there to offer any assistance. Nothing.
No, sir. Not one bit of help. They have shredded all of my records in St. Louis, Missouri, at the archive section.
Yep, I've been there on Page Avenue.
And they have shredded my education records from the Virginia Military Institute.
Well, what can you do? What kind of recourse, Peter?
I have no idea. I live off of $753 a month.
Right. So I was going to say find a lawyer, but you can't even afford one.
You're right.
But you need one. Hey, send me an email. Do you have email capabilities?
No, sir.
You do not.
I can't afford it.
How about an address if I put you on hold?
Yes, sir.
Let's do that because we might know some people, some lawyers down that way who would take this gratis and maybe try to help you out. You got to do some litigation to be sure. Don't forget, we take your tweets and your texts. We'll get to Tom in a second. Joshua in Cameron Park, California, first-time caller. Hey, Josh, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I just heard Paul Hellyer. I usually listen to you on the way home from school.
Well, good, thank you.
Yeah, I guess as for your point of view, what do you think the biggest reason why the government would lie about or not disclose this information?
Panic. I think they're concerned that if we really knew, and they knew we knew, that we'd demand certain things, that we'd panic. Some people would panic. Others would be a little more vocal. Like, give us free energy.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of propulsion system do they have? Why can't we develop it? And things like that. And I don't think they want to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary. I just wish we would know. I wish they would disclose. I mean, you'd think that even Paul Hellyer's pushing the disclosure, we would know more by now.
You would hope so. Josh, thanks. Tom, you've got either a text or a tweet.
Tweet.
What do you have?
We have a text this time.
Text this time.
This is from Max from Sarasota, Florida. Did you see the story where a baseball umpire threw out a Phillies fan for heckling? What do you think about that? I think fans pay for the right to heckle.
I don't know what they heckled, as long as it's not profanity. I think they have a right, you know, in a ball game to say stuff and stuff.
I agree with you, but in this case, I can tell you I cannot say what he heckled.
You cannot. No. Google it for me. Let's see what he said.
I know what he said. I'm telling you, he deserved to be thrown out.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Vulgarity.
Right. But in general, I agree with you. I think you pay a ticket, you can say,
yeah.
Boo, yay.
As long as you're not vulgar around other people,
yeah.
You know, there comes a limit. That's not what I call freedom of speech. does not include the right to do that, as far as I'm
concerned.
No,
this does not.
You know, you need some decorum. And you're taking care of Peter's address for me in Miami?
I've talked to Peter, and we're all good.
Okay, excellent. Next up, let's go to Dave in Wisconsin. Welcome to Open Lines. Hi, David.
Hi there. How you doing, guys?
Okay, everything's well. How about you?
Very nice.
Good.
Hot weather, muggy.
Oh, yeah. It's typical Wisconsin weather.
Days are getting shorter.
They are.
I wanted to relay to you a question. I heard that Paul Hellyer about all this money being spent and nothing to show for it.
Yep.
Well, I had an out-of-body experience many times, but this one in particular, I had three nights in a row. And I was on a parallel world. Very similar to our own.
With people that look like us?
Yes. And it was a different atmosphere and was formed different with the glaciers and all. And water seemed to be sparse. And the atmosphere was kind of like cloudy with dirt.
Did they know you were there, or were you more like an observer?
They did know I was there. The second night, I went to a building. All the buildings were like a stack of coins, like airlifted in, set down. No driveways, nothing.
They just were like, plopped they were right black, in.
And they had a glass ring around them. You could walk around, I guess. And
any idea where the planet might be?
No. But
just out there.
The first one I went to, a guy came in. I was in the basement part of it, and walk in. The guy was like a terraformer. Forester, I figure. He'd been out working. I'd seen from above these trees they were growing. They were like pin oaks, planted like corn.
Huge.
Czech corn, yeah. And I don't think the guy knew he was on a different world. And he was talking to me, and he was like, he couldn't see me, and he was wigging out.
Were they wearing clothes like we wear?
Yeah. Sure. Huh. And then second night, I went to a place that was four of these buildings, and it was built where a place I know of, but it had been geographically differently formed. The hills were all gone, and there was a lot of activity in that, and I was in the building, and it was like a commissary, and I was talking to these two girls, friendly girls behind the counter, and they realized they hadn't heard a word I said.
They couldn't see you or hear you.
Here comes a guy out of the side room with a DOD patch, and he's looking like I'm just like freaking out. He's going to grab me. He couldn't see me. On the monitors, he must have. But
how do you know you weren't dreaming as opposed to an OBE?
I had an experience years ago when in 81.
So you knew what this was.
Yeah, I called the FBI on this one dream. It was Hinckley was going to shoot Reagan.
How soon did you have that dream?
He got shot.
Wow. Now, you didn't know the guy's name, did you?
No.
No.
I was like a squirrel poked his head through the drywall, and I was in the back of the hotel room looking at him.
You call the FBI and tell them something like that. They're going to look at you as a suspect, aren't they?
They followed me for like a year.
I see.
I drink whiskey out of a bottle, and no one would have looked up.
But you tell them something like that.
All my life.
Jeez. Was it worth telling them?
Sure. I don't care.
But they didn't react to it. They didn't even listen.
Well, I even told them about the ammunition. I said, was it?
Wow.
No point?
Are you clairvoyant like this?
No, I don't know what it was.
Does this happen to you a lot?
No, not too much. I had a bad skull fracture, and that's when I started. I passed out in my sleep, I used to.
You had this concussion, and it brought you these incredible abilities.
Yeah, not nice stuff.
When you, on this OBE, when you're on this other planet, Dave, how did you come back? I mean, in wake up?
I don't know, but if I can come back, that means their souls and that can come back too, I guess.
That's true. That's a great story. The Hinckley story is fantastic. He should be out any day if he's not already. Supervision at his mother's. He's done. He's out. That's crazy. Keith in Green Bay, Wisconsin, welcome to the show. Hey, Keith, you're on the air with us.
Hi, George. Well, we the creatures of the night salute you.
Well, thank you.
In a row, it's amazing.
Salute you back.
Well, I had a counterpoint regarding your guest talking about fracking, because there's a dirty little secret about those evil fracking chemicals. They're actually boiling water for the most part.
Oh, really? Why?
Why? Because the hot water actually helps to
dislodge
the particles of the shale.
Okay.
And my father-in-law actually drives those trucks, and he said one of the other things that they'll use at that too is dry ice.
Are they getting a lot of oil that way?
Yeah. It's let's just say that there's the boom over where my father-in-law lives is pretty damned incredible, considering the number of people in the area.
Jeez. Well, I don't think that's going to stop either. That's going to probably continue.
Well, I personally have no problem with it, because mostly it is just boiling water.
You don't think it poisons or contaminates?
No, it's boiling water.
What about earthquakes?
They're going down below the water table. As far as the earthquakes go, I can't quite put a figure on that. You know, I can't. I'm not a seismologist. I'm a truck driver and equipment operator, with tradesmen and truck drivers and equipment operators all throughout my family.
Yeah, I Teamster independent.
I'm a company hand. I don't do Teamsters.
Okay.
The only way I'd ever be a Teamster is if I've got 20 mules ahead of me and a cart and two carts full of borax behind me.
What do you think of Teamsters? They did a great job years ago getting the labor force going.
Yeah, but do you remember that the guy who heckled at the Philadelphia Phillies game?
Tommy was just asking me about that. What happened?
Yeah, well, let's just say that I'm not allowed to say what I think about Teamsters for the exact same reason.
Was he a team? Oh, he wasn't a Teamster, though, was he?
Who?
The heckler.
No, but the reason why he couldn't read what the heckler said on the air.
I know.
The same reason why I can't talk about the Teamsters on the air.
Okay.
It'd be a profanity-laden, thing, and I don't want you to lose your FCC license.
No, we don't want that to happen. All right, Keith, thanks. I think the labor unions were good for this country a long time ago, especially when they were being abused and workers were being abused by companies. And it was happening. It was happening. Then I think things got a little carried a little too far on both sides. And they should have come back a little bit. And now look at the mess we're in. Everything's cheap labor in Mexico or China or some other country. We're going to come back in a moment. We've got more open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Open Lines here. Let's go right back to the phones. We're going to do this again next hour as well. And then I'll tell you what's in store for the rest of the week, culminating, of course, with Friday night's scary night. That's what we're working on. And let us go to Preston in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Preston, welcome to the show. You there?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I just wanted to talk to you about, what do you think about this whole Debbie Wasserman Schultz thing? I know you talked about it last night on the Merlin Project, but, you know, do you think that maybe there's any way that she can lose her nomination?
That's a good question. People are talking about, taking them both off. I've never heard this before.
I mean, we've seen it happen in Congress, right? You know, people, they go with the runner-up goes, or they have like a special election or something like that.
Some kind of runoff or something. But I've never heard it with the presidential election.
But
not
I mean,
like
it's
this.
Actually rig a DNC nomination. I mean, it's got to be illegal on some sort of electoral fraud, you think?
Yeah, you would think so. Just how extensive was it? Did it? I don't think Bernie Sanders would have won anyway. But he could have been a thorn in her side.
Right. But I mean, like your guest said last night with the Merlin Project, you know, what if they find some sort of incongruity with the funding, you know? You remember you said that, you know, what if there's something wrong with their funding? Maybe she got some funding illegally.
Or something. I mean, he thinks she's going to be out. And it with 3 months to go, it doesn't make any sense. It's illogical.
You know, but his side of the, you know, the DNC is screaming bloody murder. You know, I mean, they got to do something to appease these people. I mean, already some of them are already defecting to Trump already. You know, saying
I know, but Trump's losing some support, too. I mean, the whole thing's screwed up.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely crazy, George.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it.
Thanks, Preston. I've never seen a presidential campaign so screwed up. And we've got 3 months to go. I mean, the candidates have good attributes and they've got bad attributes. But this is just weird. This is all weird. Kathy in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Hello, Kathy. Welcome to the program.
Hey, George.
How's Kathy?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, sure can. Loud and clear.
I love you, and I really thank Tommy for letting me get on.
Well, great. He's a good guy.
Thank you, Tommy. Listen, when you had Mr. Paul on, I am disappointed. He is 93. That is incredible.
Isn't that something?
He's incredible.
We should all have that kind of energy at that time.
Yes, and brains.
Yeah.
But I heard him mention something about Warren Buffett, and I'm kind of blank a little bit on it, but he gave me this thought when he said it. Like, Warren Buffett is going all out to help Hillary.
Yes, he sure is.
And the Cuban other guy, I forget his first name, so last name is Cuban.
Mark.
He is too, Mark Cuban. I was going to say that. I almost remembered it. And he is too. I said, these guys ought to put money into this man, Mr. Paul, and get these books out to everybody. You know, his book was Money Mafia.
Money Mafia. Buy them, give them away to people.
Give them to everybody. You know, they got that kind of money. And I got to say one more thing, since Mr. Trump was brought up. You know, my daddy was a lot like Mr. Trump. He passed like 2015. He's 84. He was in the military for 38 years.
Wow.
Air Force and Army first.
What rank did he get?
Staff Sergeant. He was a civil engineer. I guess he was the top of sergeants. I'm sorry. I'm an Army brat. I should know more about this stuff. And I'm an only child, too. So I was like, you know, exercise like a little military baby, all this kind of stuff. Living on the you know, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Where
well, don't say you were exercised on this show because we'll think they got demons out of you.
Oh, what I mean is he would try to, you know, exercise me like the military men.
Sure.
You know. But anyway, I wanted to say that Mr. Trump says all kinds of stuff. But at least he's honest. And my daddy said all kinds of stuff. And he had the heart of gold. He was, they brought up different. We are brought up different.
Well, but you know what, Kath? There's a time and a place. If you were at a party and you saw a woman there in one of the most god-awful outfits, would you go up there and tell her that and hurt her feelings?
Well, listen, you grew up when I grew up. I'm 57. You're a little older.
Yeah, we're in the same ballpark.
Okay, we know about our daddies, and I had a few and it's a different world. They grew up different. Mr. Trump grew up different. And I wasn't happy about the DMC when they put the gentleman up there about his son, and I'm very proud of his son, and he volunteered. And so has 500,000 other young men that did the same thing. But it bothered me that he come up there, you know, talking to Mr. Trump like that. I mean, this is about his son. It shouldn't be about scolding Mr. Trump because he don't even know him. He lost his daddy. He lost his mama. He lost a big brother. You know, he's not going to answer questions the way we think he's going to answer them.
I know, but he just needs a little more finesse. You know, he really does, Kath. We got to take some more calls. But Tom, you got, what do you have, a tweet or a text?
I have a tweet, but I have to ask
you
something.
I'm going to have to say that. I'm going to just throw to you and you tell us what it is.
Okay, I will. I have a tweet, but I have to ask something real quick. And I want to make clear that you and I think pretty much the same on these elections and what's going on.
All right.
But if you really were at a party and you saw a woman and she came up to you and said, do you like my new dress? And it was god-awful ugly.
I would not hurt her feelings. To me, that's not a lie. To me, there's a difference between lies that hurt and mislead and things that, you know, are just out there. I don't think that's a lie.
Here's the problem. Because of your dishonesty, she's now going to go around this party and show everybody this great
looking dress.
She's going to
do that anyway. She's already at the party.
If you told her...
If I said to her, that's the worst looking outfit I've ever seen. You look horrible in it. You look whatever. I'm not going to hurt somebody's feelings like that.
But she would take heart. That's why she asks you, because she wants your opinion.
Now, if she's my wife or someone like that, I would sit down and tell them before we even went out. That's not a lie.
Now, that's interesting. Why would you change? Well, dress is an ugly dress.
No, because, you know, that's your companion. You know, if it's your girlfriend or your wife, I mean, if you see her and she says, what do you think of this? I'll say, no, that's not good on you. But I'm not out to hurt other people. So anyways, what's your...
What's
your tweet?
It's a tweet from Jay. And Jay says, if Trump is only there to help Clinton to win the election, what's the hidden agenda?
Well, I don't think that's the case. I think he wants to win as much as she wants to win.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, some people originally said he was in there just to help her.
People believe that.
I'm going to make my own predictions in another 6 weeks, I think.
6 weeks.
Yep. I'm going to hold off. But I'm telling you, it's strange.
It's great stuff, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
Is.
And what's the plan? Election night, November 8th. We're going to go live 5 hours.
Bunch of our favorite guests chiming in, giving us their opinions.
I want you to try to get Dick Morris for me.
Oh, he'll do
it. Because he knows it all.
Yeah, he's great, huh?
He'd be good. Yep. And we'll just keep the phone lines open for the whole night.
Keep going.
You know what? And hey, we may not have a winner by the time we get off the air. Normally, we would.
Oh, that's true.
But, you know, who knows? We may be on the air all night with no presidential winner.
Wow.
You never know.
That'd be cool.
Okay. Next up, we go to Washington. Dave's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, I wanted to share with everybody, I have two uncles that retired from the Air Force, and one of my uncles was elite Air Force security for Wright-Patterson Field in the late
40s. Oh, I'm going to like this one.
Well, I'm going to preface this story by kind of spoiling alert for you here. He was very adamant that he himself did not see anything.
Okay.
But the subject matter that he was very compelled to share with us is just the changing of the guard, for one thing. In the particular hangar where this material was brought, it went from a routine changing of the guard to literally armored cars with guards with machine guns and dogs, one of which was him. The armored car would pull up, and the guards on duty would get in the armored car to leave, and the guards that were waiting to go on would get out of the armored car with the dogs to guard this hangar. And it was known on the base, as far as he said, and he was concerned, that the material that was in there was not Russian, was not Chinese. And it was, like he said, he hated to use the term otherworldly, but it was kind of known that there was, well, people forget that the Army disclosed that they had this.
They had that right away. Then they changed it, of course, exactly. But that's what they said.
Exactly. So that's kind of what he was alluding to. And obviously, I'm just relaying what he told me. But he said that the fact that the Army disclosed this from the get-go, and it was kind of known that that material came to Wright-Patterson, and it was a pretty heavy deal for my uncle and all the people that were involved, although he never made it even close to inside, he said.
Do you think, though, that through his life he believed that this was extraterrestrial, deep down inside?
It's ironic that you would ask me that and that you would ask me that in that manner, because one of the last, my uncle has long since passed away in a tragic, he was exercising and got hit, but that's a whole other story. But one of the last conversations I had with him was related to this. it was something that he felt very strongly about, and he would bring up. And as he started kind of, you know, as older people do, fading in and out of memories, this is one thing that never left him. This was one of his stories that he would relate often. I think he did believe that.
That's something. It sounds like you were very close to him.
He was a heck of a guy. Yeah, he was a second dad. And I just loved hearing his stories. He was one of my uncles that traveled the world, and he always had great stories.
That's good. Thanks, David. I appreciate it. I've had a couple of uncles on both my parents' side who have been fantastic. They're not with me anymore, but they just echoed great stories. On my mother's side, my Uncle Fred, and every time we went to Fitchburg, Massachusetts, from Detroit for the summer, he had a camp, and we all went out there, and everybody, family was so close. It was amazing. Everybody was with each other all the time, but gosh, he would just have some great stories. He taught me a lot about storytelling because it was campfire night and everything else, and we all used to take turns telling a little story, and we were like 8, 10, 13, doing that. It was something. Okay, let's go next to Virginia, West Virginia, actually. Adam's with us on the wild card line. Adam, good morning to you. Hello, Adam. Adam? Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you go. Almost disconnected you, but you're there.
Oh, that's your mouth.
You waited too long. That would not have been nice to do that.
Apparently the speaker on my headphones is gone or something. But anyway, hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we got disconnected. Almost a year ago, I was having this dream that I can't really remember, but then my grandparents come up to me in my dream, and they've been dead for years. And from there, the dream gets so vivid, just like right now. And we sit down on this bench and we're talking. Unfortunately, I can't remember what the conversation was then. But at the end of the dream, this bus pulls up and they're like, we got to go. And I'm like, I'll go with you. And they're like, no, you can't. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get up off the bench to get on the bus with them to go. And so about a week ago, you had a guest on that was talking about angels and spirit guides.
Yeah.
And she says to just ask for proof. So I'm like, okay, I'll play along. I already believe anyway, but show me proof. Okay, so 2 days later after that, 2 or 3 days later after that, you had another guest on. I can't remember the context of the conversation, but when he said, when you board the bus to the other side, my jaw about hit the ground. I was like, oh, my God.
That happened to you?
Yeah. The dream was almost a year ago, and then these two guests were within the last 2 weeks that you had on.
In your dream state, you will experience incredible things and go to incredible places. You just have to tap into that. You really do. A couple more quick calls, and then we'll do it again next hour. We go next to St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George, long-time listener, big fan.
Good to have you with us.
I had an experience in 2009. I was walking my dog. I was about 400 yards from my car. I was just over a berm, and I came to a dirt road with a bunch of sugar sand. And in this dirt road, there was a bunch of deer tracks. I was looking down at the deer track, and I was trying to determine how many deer were in the area. And after that, a shadow came over my head. I thought of a plane. And I thought to myself, I've got time to figure out how many deer are here, and then I'll identify the plane. And then all of a sudden, I look forward, and I see this Thunderbird try to land in front of me.
Jeez.
And
huge.
I'm dead. And at that point, I had a telepathic thought in my head saying, prey runs. So I kind of knew what that meant to me. And I just stood there. And the bird never landed, and it took off, and it started circling ahead over my head.
How big was it? Like a Cessna, right?
Yes, it was.
That's scary.
It was, I would say, the wingspan was over 30 feet.
Ugh.
And it was an eagle-type bird.
It had feathers, though, right?
Yes. It was brown head, and it had like speckled white and brown on the underside, but the other side was all brown. And I would have to say it was over 7 feet tall.
That's scary.
Yes. I thought I was dead. And then it circled over my head, and I kind of felt relieved, like it's not going to attack me. I turned back to my dog that was off-leash behind me.
Probably wanted the dog.
That's what I was worried about. And then I had the second telepathic thought, and it was, it's you. So I put my focus back onto the bird, and it circled around me like about three or four times, and it went north. And I kind of just skulked back to my car, and and just I felt like this. It could have been my last. It could have been my last day.
But there's no doubt in my mind that these birds are out there somewhere. Some people think they're condors. I don't think so. I think they're thunderbirds. You know, ancient Native American mythology talked about them. They're there in Alton, Illinois, on the banks of the Mississippi. They have what is called the Piesaw bird. There's a sketch that they made of this huge bird, and there's a native story about that. I play that every once in a while, but it's the real deal. We're going to come back with another hour of Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.